Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome one and all to Trisha's True Crime Radio, where we always say, reach out and touch someone and then get sued for sexual harassment. Tonight, it is going to be a fascinating show, if I do say so myself. Two women who are two powerhouses that we have come to know and to trust, and that's what's important. Tonight, world-renowned body language expert Dr. Lillian Glass joins us. Dr. Glass's new book, The Body Language Advantage, is available on her website, and it is so cool. It's been redone. It's www.drlillianglass.com. Also joining us again tonight, our dear friend from the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute, Cheryl McCollum, and of course, a little bit later on, my unofficial official co-host, Michael in Minnesota. Well, it's almost over, my friends. Closing arguments have begun in the state of Florida versus George Zimmerman. Zimmerman is accused of killing 17-year-old Trayvon Martin. Zimmerman says it was self-defense since Martin was beating the crap out of him. It's going to be for the jury of the six women to decide which side is telling the truth. And we're going to try and get to a little of that truth tonight. And let's go first off to our guest, someone that we've been wanting to have on to discuss this case for a long time, Dr. Lillian Glass. Dr. Glass, welcome to Trisha's True Crime Radio.
Oh, I'm so glad to be on your show. I love it.
Well, thank you. We already have a lot of questions for you. And joining us in just a second, Cheryl is in the control room, as well as Michael from Minnesota, and we'll be getting to them in just a little bit. But let's go to some questions. We're just going to go straight to it. Today, closing arguments started with the prosecutor. I was not impressed at all. I thought he was just dancing all over the place. I despised the fact of how he presented his side of the story as fact when it was obvious the things he was saying that just wasn't true, and that is what is so frustrating. Okay, here are a couple of questions for you, Dr. Glass. Mm-hmm. If at this point in the trial, Zumama wants to know if you feel that George Zimmerman did get a fair trial. She says you had blogged earlier and felt that a voice comparison or interpretation should have been analyzed and presented in court. So do you think now that it's almost over, Zimmerman did get any sort of a fair trial?
Oh, absolutely not. Let's just go to what just happened the other day. It's never been done before where a judge badgers the defendant, and she was hostile, and her tone was angry, and her body language, and you know, that's very bad form. So from that point of view, that's not very fair. And also the fact that they didn't talk about Trayvon's history. They sure looked into every nook and cranny of George Zimmerman's history, but mm-hmm. What about the history of Trayvon? You know, it seems like an innocent, sweet boy who's just walking down, minding his own business. But what about the anger management issues that he allegedly had, mm-hmm. that even his friends wrote about, texted about? And what about the getting thrown out of school? And, of course, you know, he shouldn't have been shot. That's you know, it's a horrible thing to happen. But I think you have to look at the whole picture to get the whole story and to come up with the right conclusion.
When you say the judge was hostile, we could tell that. Lay people could tell that she was very hostile. But you have a different and more in-depth insight that we all want to know. What did the body language of the judge speak to you, Dr. Glass?
She leaned over the bench. Her jaw was tight. Every time his attorney spoke, she put him down before he even opened his mouth. She yelled at him. Her voice got higher. She was attacking in her tones. So she was very, very angry. And you wonder what is, you know, she seems very biased. And that's the last thing a judge should be. And that is very, very disturbing, because a jury picks up on these things, and it's kind of like little kids. They're in a school, and if the teacher yells at one of the kids, then the other mm-hmm. kids start in. So it's kind of like the same thing. It's oftentimes, you know, what does the leader think, so to speak?
Right.
I just hope this jury can see through the truth, whatever their truth is. And I just hope that it's not a political situation that it's become. Too many politicians got involved in this case. Too many people in the public, in the media, have tried this case. And it was so easy. If you listen to everything that the media said, you think, my goodness, this George Zimmerman should be hung from the highest tree. I mean, how could he do something like that and stalk somebody and do racism? But then when you hear the evidence and you hear absolutely everything and it's consistent from the witnesses, then you start thinking, wait a minute, we didn't know all the facts here. We didn't know that when he got out of the car, it wasn't to track Trayvon down. It was to get the address.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was punched or whatever. And then you see through the medical examiners how the situation took place with Trayvon on top and George on the bottom, you know, beating George's head and his nose. And so, you know, everything here is based on fear, obviously. And then when you talk about the prosecution and their final argument and kind of intimidating the jury by saying, you know, if you don't convict, and if you don't believe everything that the witness said, who was the young girl who was talking to Trayvon on the phone, then you are a racist. You know?
That's so horrible.
Go live with that. Go live with that. Because, you know, then you've got the fear, wait a minute, how should I vote? Because if it comes out and I get public on this, people will start accusing me of being a racist. So, again, it's covering one's own image and one's own reputation and one's own life.
Exactly.
He will never be the same no matter what happens to him.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I think everybody's life is more than just affected. Parts of it are ruined, if not completely ruined. As my good friend Cheryl McCollum says, there are no winners in this case whatsoever. And let's go to Cheryl. Cheryl, we have Dr. Lillian Glass on the show with us tonight. And Cheryl, I want to get your opinion of what you thought today. I want to start with this ridiculous charge I have never heard of in my life, third-degree murder and abuse of a child. They couldn't even convict Casey Anthony of that. How in the world are they going to convince George Zimmerman? And the fact of the matter is they just threw it out there. It was like they found some raw spaghetti that they cooked and they threw it on the wall to see what would stick. And I don't blame the defense for getting angry. And I thought the judge was a jerk. Thoughts?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, hello, Dr. Glass. You know I'm a huge fan.
Thank you.
Here's the deal. It was not only a stunt. It was a good one. Mark O'Mara was where? Somewhere trying to be in a quiet room, putting together his closing argument. He couldn't fully concentrate on what he was trying to do because he got the same email at 7-something that morning and was like, what in the world? He wanted to be in that courtroom. He wanted to be slamming his fist on the table and arguing for that. He couldn't be. He had more important things to do. But they didn't allow him to fully commit himself to what he was trying to do. It was a stunt. It's an absolute stunt. They're never going to get anybody that has been in this business more than 10 minutes to agree that it was anything other than that. It was never going to fly, just like the ag assault wasn't going to fly, but it gave them time to deflect what people should actually be doing. You know, and again, I'm a purist. I think if somebody is not charged with it, it's not on the table. If you have it, charge them with it. To me, that's what it ought to be. It shouldn't be, hey, let's just keep swinging until you hit something. That's not fair. And here's the deal about the comment that the prosecutor made about, well, if you don't convict, you're a racist. That may very well blow up in his face.
I hope so.
That might have really put some people off, because how dare you call me anything? You made me come here. I couldn't ignore the letter you sent me. It says greetings, but it ain't no invitation, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's very clear that if I ignore this, I'm going to jail. So you're going to sit there, take me away from my family, my children, my husband, my wives, my neighbors, my life. You're going to maybe even put me at risk because you're going to publish my name eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to call me a name? you may have very well turned some people off. Very well may have just blown up in your face. Because once again, you've stood up there all high and mighty and want to call somebody a liar. You lied.
Yeah.
You lied in your closing, sir.
Big time.
So again, you're calling names, you're pointing fingers, but you're not above it. So let's
exactly.
just be careful when we're in a glass courthouse, okay, partner? Because,
right. And, you know, can I just add, can I just
yes,
add something?
Glass.
When we talk about racism, if any racism came out during this trial, it was calling, it was allegedly Trayvon saying to this witness that a white or a cracker was
mm-hmm.
was following him. So and,
right.
and that's a very pejorative term because it mm-hmm. dates from the days of slavery when the whips were
yep.
cracked and they called them the crackers. And that's
right.
a terrible
right.
thing to say to anyone. That's like using the N-word. So
mm-hmm.
again, you know, we're talking about racism from that other point of view. And I can't see how the jury is going to accept what this girl said, because she was so unlikable and so offensive.
We're talking about
so
Dee Dee Rachel,
ways.
the girl talking to Trayvon.
Yes,
okay.
Trayvon. And you wonder, what kind of friends did he keep? Who was he to have a friend that couldn't even read cursive, that couldn't even speak properly? And it's not
mm-hmm.
Jamaican. I mean, I'm not going to buy that. I know many bilingual people and people from Jamaica, and they have a lovely accent, and they're highly articulate, and they also speak French. So this girl was had a lot of street talk, a lot of
mm-hmm.
phonic, a lot of coarse, lack of grammar, lack of communication. You couldn't hear her. You couldn't understand
mm-hmm.
her. So you wonder, what kind of a guy was Trayvon? So I think she reflected on him quite poorly.
You know, that's interesting, Dr. Glass, because Cheryl McCollum has been saying since day one, where are Trayvon's friends? Where are all his buddies? Well, it's the company he is keeping, and they don't want to present those people. And I think you're absolutely right. They had to present Rachel because she was on the phone with him, and she came across very poorly. And the prosecution is trying to guilt trip those jury members into actually believing that they might be racist if they don't find George guilty. And to me, that is just absolutely horrendous. Cheryl McCollum, you were wrapping up a thought about the prosecution, about how he lied to the jurors. Do you think the jurors picked up on that? Or is that going to be something the defense attorney has to bring forward in his closing argument?
I think both is going to happen. I don't think they missed
mm-hmm.
that because nobody else did. The blogs went nuts today because,
mm-hmm.
again, if you say, call my wife, tell her I just shot someone, versus call my wife, tell her I just killed someone, completely different. Completely.
Yeah.
So for him to use the latter in his closing argument, he didn't misspeak. He didn't get that wrong.
Mm-hmm.
He has known that statement and used it for a year. He didn't misspeak when he said fucking punk. He didn't say fucking bastard. He knew
mm-hmm.
it. He knew the terms. So for him to wait until the final hour, literally, not good. And I'm
no.
telling you, it's been, you know, the weakest, the most haphazard. They don't even seem like they know what the other one is going to get up and say. They have a conference and then go nothing further. I mean, what are you doing? It's really sad to me. Again, you've got a chief of police that is coming out saying, look, they just said make an arrest. That's
mm-hmm.
not okay.
That's
and,
scary.
You know, it is very scary. And again, this has consequences. So whether or not George goes for murder two or manslaughter, the Second Amendment will be weakened because of it. People
mm-hmm.
are saying, repeal, stand your ground. Are you kidding me? Someone starts to kill you, you believe, or do great bodily harm. They're going to cut your arm off. And there's nothing you're going to be able to do about it. If
yeah,
you're
that's
bigger,
pretty.
Stronger, or meaner, you got to take it. That's
mm-hmm.
asinine. We have
I'll
to be able to weigh to protect ourselves. And so when they just so nonchalantly, the, you know, the Trayvon justice seekers, they're not seeing this for what it is. They're either saying we're going to get justice, which means he goes to prison, or we're going to riot. Really? There's mm-hmm. no accepting of a verdict?
No in between. No
right.
in between.
If I could just also interject.
Yes,
I think
Dr. Glass.
What really brought this case to a different level was when the President of the United States, before he knew what really went on, before
mm-hmm.
he really knew who Trayvon was, said, if I had a son, he would look like Trayvon. Really, with the gold cap teeth, dropping out of school, you know,
with the gang
mm-hmm. fighting with people, get you know, no, no. I think that he misspoke.
He
and
did.
And it's become, I think, and that kind of got the ball rolling. And it seems like there was a lot of talk on the Internet today that there may have been a lot of pressure for this judge
mm-hmm.
from higher ups, from the Justice Department. So, because how could you not, I still can't understand how you cannot get an expert to analyze the voice. I'm sorry. You can sift out the excess noise. You can do format frequencies. You can look at fundamental
Absolutely.
Frequencies of the tone. You can have it reenacted where somebody gets on top of George Zimmerman and George screams, and then you embed these screams in other people's screams. And then
mm-hmm.
you have people doing the same thing at the same location, doing it through a telephone. And then you do kind of like vocal lineup, where then you have people say, okay, who's Trayvon? Who is George? Which one is George? And then you have people identifying them. You do a scientific study as best as you can so that you can do that. Now, that was definitely necessary in this whole ordeal. And if you don't have that, you have nothing. And then you have the expert from the FBI, which is laughable, saying you can't tell a scream from a voice. Duh!
That was bad.
It was like ridiculous. It was ridiculous.
Absolutely bad.
So I really think that they missed the boat. They missed the ball. And also, I don't know if George Zimmerman will get justice. It's George Zimmerman's trial. I mean, unfortunately, Trayvon is dead. And, you know, they say, well, if George would have listened to the 911, maybe he did listen to them. And maybe he just went, he wasn't following him. Maybe he was getting the directions like he said. I was watching him like a hawk.
What did you think? What did you think, Dr.
Glass? He was telling
Glass?
The truth. He was telling the truth. There were no mm-hmm. signals of deception. He was consistent. He was calm. He was telling the truth. And so, you know, whether he lied that he came out of the bushes, that could be, you know, out of
perception.
For a number of reasons. Perception. Mm-hmm. He came out of somewhere. And usually we say, oh, somebody came out of the bushes. You know, that's kind of like mm-hmm. a you know, so, oh, you lied. He was, you know, you don't look at the little picture. You look at the big picture. And now that we know all the facts, so many people like you, Trish, are saying, wait a minute, I feel really bad that I even thought those thoughts.
Oh, I feel like an idiot.
Until I heard all of the information. And you're not alone. Everybody mm-hmm. did, especially the President of the United States. Our leader gets up and says it, too. And then pictures of a gun. We start seeing pictures of pot. We see pictures of, you know, marijuana plants. We see smoke mm-hmm. coming out of this guy's mouth, gold teeth. And then his father saying that he's a thug. The thing that also got me pretty interested and where I really looked for signals of deception were the two police officers that mm-hmm. Were testifying. And the gentleman, he was so sincere, and he told the truth, as far as I was concerned, when he spoke about the fact that he did hear Trayvon's father say, that's not his son. Because in mm-hmm. that emotional moment, he would have screamed, said, that's my son's voice. He didn't do that.
Yeah, right. He didn't
and
do
so,
it. And that,
you could be mm-hmm. in shock, but that's the shock. That's part of the reaction. And the fact that there was another officer looking across the room and seeing that. And I don't think it was one officer, kind of the thin blue line covering the other officer's back.
Mm-hmm.
I really think there was some sincerity there, because she also expressed how she couldn't go through it herself. She was,
mm-hmm.
you know, crying, choking back tears. So she's telling the truth. He's telling the truth.
And not to get back on that a little bit.
Telling the truth.
Yeah, Cheryl McCollum, go ahead.
I just want to piggyback on what she's saying. You're also talking about two officers, and they lost a chief over this. They all felt pressure to make an arrest. It would make their life easier if Mr. Martin had said, yes, that's my son.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't benefit them to lie at all,
right.
Not professionally,
exactly.
Nor personally. This was not easy for them. You can tell it. They're going to be hated either way. And they're
mm-hmm.
being called racist, and that's not true.
It's awful.
Right?
Everything is, panned out the way they said it.
Cheryl,
Dr. Glass.
What do you think, Cheryl, will happen to George Zimmerman if he is acquitted? What do you think will happen?
I think that he will move. I think that he will move to, and I'll just guess, somewhere like Texas that has a large Hispanic population, where he can blend in a little bit better, and he's going to do the best that he can. But he will
maybe
not
out
stay
of the
in
country.
The state of Florida.
Perhaps,
but
the
I think
country.
He's got enough family here. I think that he'll want to stay here, but I think that they will all collectively, make a drastic change.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I think
it's interesting.
Oh, go ahead, Dr. Glass.
Go ahead, Gutschers. I think that if he was smart, he would get out of the country. For the simple reason that there's going to be a lot of vigilantes out there trying to attack him. If you remember, Spike Lee was giving out his address.
Sure.
And it's not going to stop, because people are going to believe what they want to believe. It's an interesting story. And it could be a believable story if you didn't know the facts, that this guy, this
sure.
wannabe cop, came out there and was hunting down young black men. Oh,
mm-hmm.
that's terrible, and especially when you think of the history that has happened in this country, the black history, and the dark history, I should say, what happened, and the embarrassing history. And then now you see that people will not let him rest. So
mm-hmm.
in my view, if he is acquitted, I think he really should leave the country and get some major plastic surgery to
Let's
change
go to
his
a-
look and his name.
Oh, go ahead,
Can I
Cheryl.
Just jump in real quick
yes,
about that?
Please.
Whether it's Spike Lee or the new Black Panther Party or the Illuminati clothing line, and Tricia, your show has always been a really phenomenal platform for a reason.
Thank you.
So I'm just going to lay this out as plainly as I know how. Anyone that tweets or posts or offers a reward for someone else to go do it, you're a punk. You're
yes.
the weakest punk ass I've ever met. If you want that man dead, do it your damn self. Don't tell somebody else to do it. And there's somebody that is 17 or 19 that's going to try to make a name for themselves, and that life is the one that's going to be gone too, either by
exactly.
death or prison. Don't do that. It is irresponsible. And anybody that would tell you to do it that ain't got the guts to do it themselves, again, talk.
Total punk. Let's
yeah,
go
and,
to someone.
And,
who, go ahead. Go ahead,
no,
Dr.
Glass. I was just saying, and the one good thing, and even though they're having these campaigns where use your voice, use your hands, why is that going on in the first place? You know, that's kind of interesting, like pre-prevention, but
mm-hmm.
it's the whole thing has just really gotten out of hand.
But doctor,
and I think they're.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
If you were a member of the black community, would you not be insulted that not just the United States, but the whole world thinks that you have no self-control, that you can't watch a trial and accept the verdict and ascertain what's actually occurred without burning
yeah.
stuff down?
I think it doesn't go to black or white at this point. I think it's people that will perceive it. I think whatever race you are, if you understand all the facts, then you're going to be more rational in your thoughts. But again, if you're stuck in that loop, that thought that everybody else was stuck in, including the president, that this guy was hunting down a black child, of course you're going to be enraged. And some people can't get out of that mental loop. No matter what mm-hmm. you tell them, they're still going to believe that.
Absolutely right. I want to go to somebody who is not a punk. He is my unofficial official co-host. This is Michael in Minnesota. And Michael, I know you have been wanting to talk to Dr. Lillian Glass for quite a while. So I'm going to turn the floor over to you, my darling Michael, and I'll let you speak to Dr. Glass and to Cheryl, and take it away.
Oh, thank you so much, Tricia. Good evening, ladies.
Hi.
Dr. Glass, I'm so glad you were able to join because I'm hoping you can answer questions for us. It was actually me who, when I spoke to Tricia last night, I said, I need to talk to the body language expert. Can you get her on? And that was
I said, you, of course.
Oh, she said yes immediately. She didn't even say hello. She said, what time do you need me tonight? That's how she answered the phone. That's how Dr. Glass answered the phone. It was great.
I love it, and I'm so thankful, and it's always a pleasure to see Cheryl or to be with Cheryl. But anyway, Dr. Glass, you already covered one of my questions about George Zimmerman's body language during the interrogations. Mm-hmm. I thank you for that observation because I found him so incredibly credible. And I am not an expert, so I wanted to hear your take.
But
you've already answered that.
You see, you are an expert, and that's the thing that most people understand body language. You know, certainly what my goal is to let people know that they already know it. So what we're seeing and what we're feeling is the truth. So when you're watching him, you're feeling that he's credible. You're seeing that he's credible. He's consistent. The way he moves, the way he acts, his openness. And he's not defensive. He's not hiding anything. So from that point of view, you really see that his body language is a body language of someone that would not lie, that would tell
right.
the truth.
I see it. I know exactly what you're talking about because the minute I saw Jodi Arias speaking on the stand, now the interrogation videos of hers were too grainy, so I really wasn't picking up as much of the deception. But when she was on the stand and it was in high def, I could tell immediately that I was so uncomfortable. I knew she was lying. But anyway, back to this trial. I am so glad to hear your thoughts on the judge as well. She's bothered us. We've talked about it ad nauseum on this show. We had Mickey Sherman on last night who actually really likes the job she's doing, which I thought was shocking coming from defense attorney. Yeah. But did you happen to watch any of the prosecution's closing statement today?
Well, a little bit of it. They are very passionate, but it's over the top.
It's so over the top. And I want to get your take on his body language because I felt the same discomfort with him. And I think he's got a rather pleasant voice, but I found myself just irritated by the sound of his voice and the way he raise it. And what does that mean when it goes so high in pitch as he's trying to emphasize a dishonest truth is all I can say.
He's trying too hard. And when you try too hard, the muscles in your throat tighten up, and that's why you get that high pitch. And again, he's trying to be dramatic. He's trying to be theatrical and to try to get that point across. But it's backfiring because it's not working. The people are not dumb. The public is not stupid, and neither are jurors. And so they're going to see right through that, hopefully.
I think so, too. Michael, do you have any other questions at the moment?
I sure will, but I'll just sit back and listen to these beautiful women. I love listening
okay.
to them.
We will come back to you in just a little bit. I promised I would take this person's call when they called in. So it is area code 919. You're on the air with Dr. Lillian Glass, with Cheryl McCollum, Michael in Minnesota, and me, Trish. How are you? 919, are you there?
Hello, area Trish.
Hello. Yes, are you there, my darling? I can hear you very loud and clear. What is your question for these wonderful women?
First of all, thank you. I actually had the phone on mute, so you couldn't hear me in the background. I don't know if you could do that, but then I want to take it off mute, and I thought I hung up on you, so I apologize.
No, we're good.
Once again, you've got great guests on tonight, so this is the second time I've listened to your show, last night and tonight, so you're batting 1,000.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I do have a bunch of questions, one big question, and then a bunch of observations. And so can I put it this way? I'll spit the question out first and then maybe the observations after that, if that's okay.
Absolutely. You are the king of this show at the moment. You go for it.
Thank you. Now, once again, I'll defer to the experts on the show. But if I'm not mistaken, I know they included the lesser charge of manslaughter in terms of what the jury could consider. If I'm not mistaken, is not intent a part of a manslaughter charge?
Cheryl McCollum,
yes.
Do you know?
Yes.
Explain a little
yes.
further, please.
Well, again, it's going to be hard to get the manslaughter if you don't have murder, too. They're very similar. So what they're actually asking the jury is, okay, you did something that caused this, and it was intentional that you, whatever it is you did, and
mm-hmm.
you did so, you know, with a little bit of anger. So basically there's three elements there. The only one that I think absolutely positively that they meet is the first one, and that is a person died during
mm-hmm.
the event. Well, that happened. But then, again, the depraved, the evil, the actions mm-hmm. and anger, they don't have that. And that's why you saw Mark O'Meara ask every single witness, whether it was a prosecution witness or his own, do you hear George angry? Was he acting in a depraved way? Was he acting in an evil way? However he worded it, same type meaning. And they all said no. And that's
mm-hmm.
what he's going to remind the jury tomorrow. You have to meet every single element. If you don't meet one element, it's off the table. It's like as simple as this. Urinating in public. Were you urinating? Yes or no? Was it in public? Then there you go. It doesn't get any harder than that. So a
mm-hmm.
lot of things that they're doing here, I don't love the lesser included. Again, I think you ought to charge somebody based on the evidence that you have, and not give them what I would consider an out. Well, I don't like murder, too. That's too harsh. They didn't meet that. I don't believe he did that. But let's go ahead and vote this because, hey, we got to go home, too. We got to live in this community, too.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Okay, is this Alex? Is that your name, sir, I believe?
Yeah, Alex. Actually, can I follow up on that question with the
Please.
Intent?
Okay, Please,
well, I know murder, too, you have to show ill will and a depraved mind and stuff like that. But
right.
I thought manslaughter, you specifically have to show some form of intent. And the reason why I'm asking that question is that, and if I'm not mistaken, if you listen to the closing arguments of the prosecuting attorney, I would say approximately three times, he specifically said that George Zimmerman did not intend to set out to murder Trayvon Martin. So
right. He went to Target.
Yeah, what I'm saying is if he is saying specifically, and he said it three times, that George Zimmerman mm-hmm. did not intend to kill Trayvon Martin, and the reason I'm asking that is, okay, first of all, there's no way in hell they're going to get murdered, too. No
mm-hmm.
way in hell.
Yeah.
So what I think they're
That's
hoping for at the most is a compromised jury. Well, they'll take
sure.
the middle of the road, but which is manslaughter. So, but if manslaughter is one of the element is, of course, you know, someone had to die, but if one of the other elements is intent, if he is specifically saying to the jury three times that George Zimmerman did not set out, did not intend to kill Trayvon Martin, is he not wiping that manslaughter charge right off the bat off the table?
Again,
Cheryl McCollum, and then we'll go to
Dr.
Glass.
It sounds absolutely. And let me go one step further. You're going to hear Mark O'Meara tomorrow give the closing argument of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to step by step go through this, Alex from North Carolina, and he's going to tell you getting out of your car is not illegal. And we've talked about that on this show. Calling 911, obviously not illegal. Staying on the phone with them, not illegal. Following Trayvon Martin was not illegal. So when you ask that jury, throughout this whole story, stop me when George Zimmerman breaks the law. They won't stop you at all. He had a gun legally. He carried it legally. He drove legally. He parked and got out legally. He stayed on the phone with 911, which was the right thing to do and legal. They said, don't follow him. We don't need you to do that, which was not a direct order from a law enforcement official. It was advice from 911, which, again, I think the other victim of the home invasion did a beautiful job saying 911 told me to get a weapon and protect myself. Hello, that's 911's job, which, again, mm-hmm. we talked about on Trisha's show. At what point does George break the law? He certainly was the one getting his ass kicked. Trayvon doesn't have a mark on him. So there's mm-hmm. zero evidence that George threw the first punch. There's zero evidence that George did anything wrong. And Trayvon had 4 minutes to get home at the point he started running. He chose not to. There is evidence he doubled back and met George and surprised him. There is evidence that he could have made it home. It was 70 yards from the tee to his back door.
Right. That's what's so tragic. He was so close. Dr. Glass, did you have any comments that you wanted to add?
Well, I think I wish it would be interesting. I wish Cheryl was giving the closing arguments.
Me too.
It would
be great.
How you came across what you just
said. It would
be
wonderful.
But let's hope that he brings everything up that the prosecution said. You know, it sounds like we're pro Zimmerman. But I don't think we're pro anybody. I think we're looking for justice. And if we didn't have all those facts and we didn't hear all those witnesses, we could jump to conclusions. And
just like
the president
we did.
And now,
just like I did.
I think you're raising a very valid point that Tricia and I have tried to say over and over and over. I'm on the side of the truth. And I'm just telling you, I've never in my life seen 4 law enforcement officials, 1 federal, 3 local, testify for a defendant.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what?
Exactly.
I mean, and the police say we have no probable cause.
Mm-hmm. But
Dr. Glass?
Will be interesting to hear what happens. I mean, just the pressure, the whole politics, the whole being tried in the media. It's been entertainment for a lot of news media.
Oh, yeah.
It's been sensationalized. And the more you hear it, and it does sound like a horrible story until you hear the details. You go, oh, my goodness, that's why. And then you hear this chief of police gets fired, and he's, that's going to be an interesting lawsuit.
I was just going to say, Dr. Glass,
imagine.
It sounds like to me there's going to be all kinds of lawsuits flying because you have the chief of police that was pressured, detectives that were pressured. Don't you see that happening?
And the media, too.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be some suits against certain media people.
And there should be.
From what happened. Mm-hmm.
It was.
Can I tell you something else?
Yes,
think
Cheryl.
Think about you were a suspect in a case where that medical examiner was their star witness.
Oh, that was bad.
Really? Yeah, but think about all the pending cases, Tricia.
Oh, my
gosh.
If I'm
a defense attorney.
I'm going to jump on that.
Please. Please let him be the one that did the autopsy in this case. Because, again, this case went to court so fast. There are people that had loved ones murdered 2 years ago that ain't seeing the inside of a courtroom. That's
mm-hmm.
what you ought to be mad about. Why does Trayvon get to be the head of the line? That's not fair. He's the one that has gotten special treatment from the
right.
beginning.
Because
and
of
it's going to come back and hit him in the butt.
Right, because of leaders, because of people jumping
leaders
to conclusions.
Yep.
And these people that are rabble-rousers. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Glass, this is something I said on the show, and you mentioned what the president said about if I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon. I said, well, you know what he hasn't said? My daughters, I hope they end up acting like Needy.
Yeah, they'll never say that. Never
say that.
That'd be interesting.
You can't pick and choose whose side you're taking, Mr. President. And a bear comment
ain't going
to handle
there should be
one.
An apology. I think there should
That's
be an apology.
I'm a big supporter of Obama, I agree.
You know, if there isn't an apology, that speaks volumes in itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's a teachable
moment
never
done
for
it.
Everybody.
He should have never done it. He should have been the one to say, let's wait and let justice, you know, our justice system work. Because, again, that's what I have praised Ms. Fulton over and over. She said, we believe in the justice system. We believe in this jury. We're going to let them do their job. She could have had that city already on fire.
Yeah, but it's so interesting because so many people have that hair trigger emotional response because when we think back to the history of this country with the Emmett Till and being unjustly accused for nothing,
sure,
and horrible treatment of black people, horrible, and we, as Americans, that's just not what we're about. And to have treated a group of people like that is unconscionable. So, again, you can understand it from a black perspective that, you know, it's kind of like an emotional response, like, oh, no, not again. So, and now we're seeing that it isn't again. It was, it really, now that we know the facts, that it had nothing to do with his race. It could have been, he could have been purple or green and have been in the neighborhood and punched Mr. Zimmerman, and that could have been the case. But what I'm also concerned about is, as his lawyer said, he'll never be safe. And I think that in order to be safe, he really has to go, like, kind of in a witness protection program, so to speak, and really get a new identity, because his life as George Zimmerman will be in danger.
You're absolutely right. And one thing I think we need to remember, and you brought this up, Dr. Glass, and I think it's very important, when you think of cases like Emmett Till, that creates such an outrage in all of us. We never want to see anything remotely like that happening again. And I think that's why when we see the possibility of something happening, something unfair and unjust, we all rush to that conclusion. We need to step back and wait. Yes, racism is alive and well. Yes, there are people out there that will kill people because they're black. There are pigs like that out there. But in cases, we need to step back, not let the Al Sharptons and the Spike Lees of the world throw out all these buzzwords to get us all upset. We want justice. We never want to see what happened to Emmett Till happened to another black person. Like I said, not anything even close. But this isn't helping that cause. This is making it worse. This is dividing the country. And that is the problem that I have with this prosecution and with the people that are speaking out on the cable shows and not looking at the evidence. It is so unbelievable to me that we can have intelligent people look at the exact same thing, as Michael in Minnesota has pointed out, and come up with totally different scenarios and different meanings. Michael in Minnesota, I just have this feeling you are bursting, my darling. Are there other questions that you have for Dr. Lillian Glass or Cheryl McCollum?
Oh, there are, but I want you to go back to Alex. He has other things he wanted to say, and I'm enjoying listening. So I'm here. I'll speak up when I feel
you
so
jump
moved.
In. Let's
okay,
jump in.
Thanks,
let's go
lovely.
Back to Alex. People in the chat room love Alex. So, Alex, you are now a star, my dear, and you are back on the air. Do you have you had some follow-up questions, I believe.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Thank you. And thank you, Michael. But anyway, actually, I wanted to follow up on some of the things that a couple of people said on the phone tonight, especially about Gentile's testimony, who I guess is Trayvon Martin's friend. If you actually listen to what the prosecuting attorney said tonight, he repeatedly said over and over again, yeah, she might not be sophisticated, and yeah, she might not be articulate, but was she not telling the truth? Was she not, you know, speaking the truth? But if you actually listen to what she said, she told Trayvon to run. She told him to run home. Now, I think it's all... You can, you know, dispute, well, does he not have a legal right to walk on the sidewalk and whatever, but I think the prosecuting attorney is trying to have it both ways. Listen to what she said. Was she not telling the truth? But when she told Trayvon Martin to run home, get away from this guy, he obviously did not run home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he
exactly.
actually said, I'm not running. That was her testimony. But Trayvon said, I ain't running.
So, but that's exactly what I'm saying, is that the prosecuting attorney wants us as, or the jury, to listen to her, but Trayvon didn't listen to her.
Yeah, that's a great point.
That's a good point.
Yes. That's a very good,
that's a good point.
I'm glad you brought that up. And also, you know, she was afraid for Trayvon. You know, she even mentioned she thought he could get raped. I mean, she even mentioned that in her testimony, which was kind of interesting from a female perspective. And not a male perspective. But, you know, again, the credibility has a lot to do with your appearance. I hate to say it, but there have been studies that show this, that a person who doesn't speak properly is judged to be not as credible. A person
That's
who looks a certain way, and not racially, it has nothing to do with skin color, but how they present themselves. Unfortunately, there have been studies back in the 80s and the 70s that have reflected this with jurors, and so you really see this is a reality, whether you like it or not.
Well, I agree with all that, and the reason why I bring that up is because, you know, everyone's making a big deal about, well, Zimmerman didn't listen to the 911 operator. Well, they're saying he didn't when they said, we don't need you to follow him, and I kind of beg to differ that he didn't stop following him. But they're making a big deal about the 911 operator said, don't follow him, but yet Rachel Gentile, whatever her name was, said, run, run. Trayvon didn't listen. So you can fault George Zimmerman for not listening to the 911 operator, but you also have to lay some fault at Trayvon's feet for not listening to his friend.
Let me, if I can interject, how do you know he didn't listen to the 911 operator?
No,
because not to say how do you know, but how does one know? Because look at what really happened. Now we have more information. He said he was looking for the address. That's a whole different story than following somebody.
I even think it's bigger than that. I think if you actually listen to the 911 call, because a lot of people, especially, you know, people have made a big deal about he was running, because as soon as he gets out of the car, you can obviously hear some kind of either breath, wind, or there's obviously something going on. But as soon as the 911 operator says, you don't need to follow him, and he says, okay, that whatever effect it was immediately stops.
Excellent.
That's true.
Excellent point. So he might have
he said okay.
Yes, so he might have, I mean,
and said okay.
You can give the prosecution, well, he was running. Okay, let's say George Zimmerman got out of the car and started running after Trayvon. And let's say give him that credit, but as soon as the 911 operator said, we don't need you to do that, and he says okay, that changes. Whatever that background noise was, whether it was him breathing hard because he was running or whether the wind was hitting his cell phone receiver, whatever. But whatever that noise was, it stopped.
Brilliant point.
It is.
Very good.
Absolutely.
Because that really speaks volumes. And I do hope that the defense brings that information up, because the story of somebody chasing someone and not listening to the operator, you know, that's a story that enrages you. But the story that they did listen to the 911 operator, and they just went to get just as they were getting the address, they were punched and a fight ensued, and both were afraid for their respective lives. That's a whole different story, and that's the story that needs to be out there.
It's absolutely right.
Testimony,
Cheryl. I can tell you're jumping at the bit. That's the word.
Alex is dead on the money, and we talked about that on your show. Go back and listen to it. He's immediately out of breath. He immediately is able to catch his breath and talk with no issue. Here's what you're probably going to hear tomorrow again. Mark O'Meara is going to make it clear. If George got out of the car and chased Trayvon and pushed Trayvon and even hit Trayvon, he still does not have to take a beating under the self-defense law. So again, all of these things they keep saying, but he got out of the car. He got out of the car. He followed him. None of that is illegal.
Yep.
None of it.
Even if
George threw the first punch, which there's zero evidence about, if Trayvon starts to get the better of him and is pounding his head on concrete, and George thinks, if I pass out, he'll kill me because I'm screaming for help and nobody's coming.
Nobody's coming.
If I lose consciousness, I'm done. Even if he started the fight, he doesn't have to be killed legally. So all of this posturing is for naught under the law. So again, under the law, George Zimmerman has not been convicted. Now again, what the jury's going to do, I don't know. I can tell you what our mock jury did. I can tell you I think that's close to what the prosecution is praying for, which is the reason they wanted the lesser included. So a jury says, well, yeah, clearly murder two is a no. So let's just go with manslaughter. Everybody's happy.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what our mock jury did at an all-black college.
Right. And so, and Alex, you were going to add to that.
Well, I was actually going to talk about nose punching.
let's hear about nose punching. I've been punched in the nose by accident, and damn, it hurts.
Can I ask you a question, Tricia?
Yes.
When you were punched in the nose, what happened to you?
It was actually in junior high, and a guy was explaining something to a friend, and he was swinging his fist around, and he was telling a story, and I literally walked into his fist while it was swinging, and he was swinging as hard as he could, and it went right in my nose, and I fell down, and I was, like, stunned. I felt like I didn't know what was going on. And, you know, then I felt like an idiot, and he laughed and thought it was funny, and I killed him and buried him in my backyard. But that's a whole other story. Anyway, but, no, it was really awful, and it hurt. It wasn't broken or anything, but it hurt. And I was not able to respond when it happened. I couldn't, you know, I didn't know who was hitting me or what, but I couldn't figure out what was going on, and I just dropped to the ground.
And, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, I've been hearing this, all this testimony about, you know, well, especially in closing arguments, did he just lay there and take it? You know, Trayvon's got 10 arms, and, mm-hmm. you know, George Zimmerman is just laying there like a, you know, jelly or whatever, taking everything. And I think that they're missing one of the crucial points is that, I mean, I guess you have to take into granted that I apparently the first punch thrown was to his nose and it broke his nose. But if you've ever broken anyone's nose or seen someone's nose broken or maybe watched like an MMA fight or anything mm-hmm. like that, what happens is, and Trisha can testify to this, as soon as your nose is hit, and actually I was actually kind of glad that the expert they had on last name was Root, testified it, because I've been actually kind of like silently screaming that someone needs to talk about his broken nose in terms mm-hmm. of the reason why he wasn't able to quote-unquote defend himself or why he didn't defend himself. Because the first thing that does happen to you when you do have your nose broken is, first of all, your eyes water. Your vision
yes.
is blurred. Second mm-hmm. of all, you are either going to fall backwards, you're going to fall forwards, or something like that, but you are going to become disoriented. Now, how long that effect lasts, it could be seconds, it could be, you know, it could be a minute, but either or, you are going to be disoriented. So mm-hmm. them saying, well, you know, why wasn't he fighting back? Initially, he wasn't fighting back because, Trayvon punched him, broke his nose, and then once his nose was broken, he was raining down more punches and hitting him, so it was like a constant onslaught. So basically, he could not catch his breath.
That is brilliant. You're absolutely right. I know exactly what you mean. You are incapacitated for many reasons. Your eyes are watering. You're disoriented. I didn't think to stand up and hit. I just literally fell down and went, blah, what happened?
Well, you go into self-preservation mode. You're like, mm-hmm. okay, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? You're not so much focused on the other person. You're worried about
right.
the pain that's going on in your nose and why, mm-hmm. you know, why you're, you know, you could be bleeding, you know, and all this other stuff about swallowing blood and where's the blood.
That's a very good point that you brought up, because I think that probably does speak to the fact that why George fell down, maybe why he was on the bottom. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, the thing that concerns me the most is the political pressure that
Absolutely.
How even the judge has had. Maybe that's why she was so toxic and so aggressive
mm-hmm.
and so hostile. Maybe she was getting pressure from above. Maybe, you know, that scares me. That scares
that's
me.
That's the worst. Yeah, that's awful.
And that, you know, when people don't think that they have a case, or when they say, no, we can't arrest them. I mean, you know, he's okay. And the police officers say, you know, there's no case here. And then,
mm-hmm.
you know, he shouldn't be arrested. And then he is arrested because some people say that he should be. You know, this is frightening. This is frightening.
Well, can I comment on that, if you don't mind?
Yes. Alex, mm-hmm. please go ahead.
And this is the one thing, I don't want to say it's baffling to me, because I can somewhat understand in terms of, you know, the I guess, the animosity towards George Zimmerman in terms of what the press has covered and what they've, you know, all, like exactly what you guys said earlier, all the political pressure, all the, you know, the media pressure in terms of, hey, this was a quote-unquote, and in fact, I think this is what I would call a scale-back trial, meaning everything since the beginning has been scaled back from the point where this was a racist, you know, hate crime, white guy kills a black kid, and then it turns out, well, okay, well, you know what, he's not white, he's maybe part white, but he's definitely Hispanic, so it's not really, it's still a hate crime, and then they just kept scaling it back to, well, okay, well, race really isn't a factor, but and they just kept scaling it back to the point where, well, it's, you know, George Zimmerman is on top. And, okay, well, you know, he's not on top anymore. But, yeah, this could have – it just constantly scaled back from day one to the point we are right now. And in closing arguments, they scaled back big time. So one of the things I wanted to mention about, you know, in terms of the political pressure and stuff like that, and I guess this might go back to the ME or the corner and stuff like that. I know people are thinking that, well, you know, maybe maybe some of the officers could have been affected and stuff like that, but could not, since the ME works for the state, could he not be affected too? Because, and Tricia, I was talking on the phone, or I was talking in the program last night about the lack of blood evidence and stuff like that, and about the fact that he was extremely, there's no way in hell that there shouldn't have been more blood on the clothing and stuff like that. And I think you, well, depending on who saw the trial, Dr. DeMaio said that, the medical examiner leaving the room while the clothes were examined or removed from Trayvon was a big no-no. So, you know, I guess my question is that since he did leave the room, does anyone really know if the clothes that were initially on Trayvon, the hoodie, the shirt underneath, were those actually the clothes that were presented as evidence? Because there is no way in hell, especially a white shirt, and with rain, especially with the rain, you know, which could actually dilute the blood, which means it would spread even more. There's no way in hell that.
Well, they said it was contaminated, but I think I think the main thing is we were all jumping to conclusions because we didn't have enough information. We didn't have all the information. And that's the teaching lesson here, that we need the information before we come to conclusions.
We were being lied to.
We were being fed what they wanted us to know.
Yes, absolutely. Alex,
answer one of those questions for
Yes, please
from
do.
A forensic standpoint.
Yes.
Alex, for example, if you are going to go swimming all summer, if chlorine makes your hair coarse, if you wet your hair before, the chlorine can't soak in because your hair can only absorb so much. That's true of any cloth. So if Trayvon was already out in the rain from 6:30 till 7:20, his clothes were already saturated with water. Mm-hmm. So there's only going to be the possibility of it being able to soak up so much blood. Does that make sense to you?
Well, that's interesting.
I've got to disagree with that. I can understand that in terms of the soaking process, but the discoloration process would still be there.
Well,
it
I
may.
Don't.
Yeah. I mean, there's. I mean, I can understand that in terms of, you know, there he was. I mean, because I totally agree with you that the rain obviously had an impact in terms of DNA evidence, maybe removing blood off of. You know, then that's another thing. You know, they were talking about, well, you know, Trayvon, you know, George Zimmerman said he covered his nose and, you know, to silence him up, and there was no blood on, you know, Trayvon Martin's hands. Well, duh, that's rain. I can understand that. But in terms of clothing and in terms of the environment itself, there should have been, I mean, once again, 3/4 of blood in terms of a human body is a lot of blood.
Here's what I want you to do. Grab a rag that's white, and I want you to soak it in water. And then I want you to take some coffee and pour it on there, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
Not coffee. Let's say red ink.
Okay, whatever.
Yeah, I promise you, it will not. It will not.
Call me back.
I will
promise
you. Do
the experiment and put it on YouTube.
I'm sorry?
Do the experiment and put it on YouTube. And then we can all see it. Alex, I'm going to put you on hold for a little bit. We have a few more callers and other questions.
Absolutely.
Is that okay,
I did not
dear?
Mean to hog up your time.
Oh, no, you're not at all. We love it. We love it. So I'll put you on hold, and then I'll probably come back to you before the show's over, okay? So hang tight.
Thank you.
In case you're just joining us, we have a couple of kick-ass women. That's the best way to describe it. We have Cheryl McCollum from the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute and world-famous, world-renowned body language expert Dr. Lillian Glass. Be sure and check out her website to pick up her new book at drlillianglass.com. Okay, ladies, we're kind of running a little short on time here, so we're going to wrap it up in just a little bit, but we do have a couple more callers. Do you have time to take a few more calls?
Of course. Sure.
Oh, good. Okay, great. Let's go to area code 678. Area code 678. Do you have a question for Dr. Glass or for Cheryl McCollum? 678, are you there? Area code 678. Okay, area code 678. We'll go back on hold. And let's just double check the chat room. I haven't checked the chat room for quite a while. And let's see, and also we do have some questions here. Let me get to those. Sorry, I was so wrapped up in what everybody was saying, I was paying absolutely no attention to what I'm supposed to be doing. Oh, Cheryl, what exactly does second-degree murder mean and manslaughter mean? And what's the other manslaughter terms? There's involuntary and voluntary. Involuntary, voluntary manslaughter, second-degree murder, and manslaughter. Explain those to us, please.
Oh, Lord. Okay. Well, again, an attorney would be better suited for this question, and especially it relates to Florida. But basically, the murder charge says you had the intent, you acted in a, you know, depraved way. You were angry. You set out to murder this person. So that's mm-hmm. like saying, okay, I'm going to come over to your house, I'm going to shoot you in the head, and I'm leaving. That's murder. When you have manslaughter, it's something that causes your death, but maybe something I didn't intend. So, for example, let's say you and I are laughing and joking, and I shove you, Trisha, and go like, oh, shut up. I can't believe you did that. You slip, mm-hmm. and you hit your head on the corner of the table. Involuntary manslaughter. My
okay.
action caused your death, but I did not leave my house and say, hey, I'm going to go kill Trisha.
Mm-hmm.
But what I did by pushing you made you die.
Okay.
Involuntary manslaughter. Does that make sense?
That makes sense.
So
I can understand that.
When the caller was saying, why would the prosecutor say he didn't leave his house with the intent to do it, but his actions caused it? Well,
mm-hmm.
again, I think that's going to be a stretch because, again, you have to prove, and they didn't do this, that George attacked first. There's no proof of that. And Dee Dee couldn't testify to that any more than she could testify to what wet grass sounded like. She doesn't know what the bump sound was. She doesn't know
mm-hmm.
if it was a punch. And she can testify that, oh, it was definitely Trayvon being punched. Come on now. You can't know that. And again, she can say now that she was real worried and all that. She turned the phone off and didn't find out until she went back to school.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This
yeah.
is
she didn't even go
first.
To the funeral. And she
no.
didn't even go to the
right.
funeral and lied about that. So what's
and
that
lied
about?
About her name. Is your name
mm-hmm.
Dee Dee? Is your name Diamond? Is your name, you know, whatever we found out that it was, Gentile? I mean, we
mm-hmm.
know she lied. Most
mm-hmm.
people are accepting the fact she lied about Trayvon using the word cracker. Most people don't believe that he told her he was afraid of anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Most people believe the part about I ain't running is true, and that's why she's like, talk to you later. That's, you know what I mean? Because he's about to pop off on this guy, and he's like, I'll call you back when I handle this.
Yeah, and it was like
it's
no big deal to her. That's what it sounds
more
like.
More reasonable. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't call his father. She didn't call his mother. She didn't call other friends to go, oh, my Lord, I hope everything's okay. That's what a reasonable person does. And
mm-hmm.
let's just put it in perspective. Trisha, the other night you had a slight incident where clearly you were upset about something. We all knew
yes.
it. Then we all knew to check back with you. That's what a normal person does.
She doesn't do that. So she wasn't upset or afraid for him at all. And again, Trayvon never called 911. Trayvon never called his father. Trayvon, when the man came out of his house, did not look at him and ask for help or get off George. He kept hitting him.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So Trayvon's intent was clear, to whoop George's ass.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. That's and I would not have believed that going into this trial. Dr. Glass, mm-hmm. you were about
now,
to
I don't
want to
start something at the last
Cheryl,
minute.
Go ahead.
I got to ask Dr. Glass one question because I've been dying mm-hmm. for somebody to ask her. Has she thought about the body language of Trayvon's parents in court? The gum smacking, the right in the nose.
Yeah.
What happened? Okay.
That's a turnoff. That is such a turnoff for two people that are distraught. I think they may have been estranged. I mean, the emotion and I think that the it's just clueing in. He was living with his father, correct? Or was he living with his mother?
Correct. Visiting.
Correct. With
he was living with his mother, but she sent him to the father because of his suspension.
Because of what? Because of his
suspension from school.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't see them very emotional in the courtroom. You don't see them.
Mm-hmm.
You just see very stoic and very. And they're passing notes to each other. And I think, and then the father mentioned that Trayvon was a thug. You know, he admitted it. So I think they had problems
mm-hmm.
with him from the beginning. And they know he was no angel. And they know
right.
That he's now the poster boy for this, you know, false justice. And they're trying to quell it. One thing I give them a lot of credit for is they're trying to say, you know, let's all just calm down and not get all emotional and, you know, let's not create a problem. So I think the fact that they're out front doing that is very responsible. But you don't see, from a body language point of view, a lot of emotion. Like if you saw the Trayvon in that first picture where he looked so innocent, you know, you would expect them to be a lot more compassionate, a lot more emotional about this thing, especially what they're hearing in court. But you're not hearing that. You're not seeing that, rather.
Good point. Very good point. We do have some. Oh, Cheryl, go ahead. I heard you take a breath.
That was Michael.
Michael. That's not Michael Breath.
I just wanted to hear from her. Yeah.
Michael, what were you going to say?
There was chatter in the chat room about the bullet that killed Trayvon being a hollow point. This is the first time hearing of that. Is that true, Cheryl?
I've never heard that.
I've never heard that either.
Cheryl, do you know if it was a hollow point bullet?
I'm trying to remember what the expert, the firearms examiner said, and I'm drawing a complete blank. I promise I'll talk about it tomorrow night if we meet up again. I don't remember, and I'm very, very sorry. I can
and
talk
it
about
seems
it
like something we would have recalled, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
a big deal.
To me, well, you know, I'm not going to put a lot of emphasis on, you know, the bullet of choice. I mean, again, he's getting advice from police officers. That's what they normally carry.
Mm-hmm.
The bullet did go straight through him. So if I had to guess right now at that range, it still could have gone straight through him, even if it was a hollow point. So I don't know the answer.
According to one of our chatters, Ms. Perot, she is saying that, yes, in court, they said it was a hollow point. I don't remember that, but it does make a difference because I think isn't a hollow point just a lot more dangerous and more lethal?
Well, the hollow point is designed to explode on impact. And
mm-hmm.
so what it does immediately is it, you know, when it explodes, it basically will do more damage. It's more like a shotgun at that
mm-hmm.
point. And that's what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to stop the threat. Well, again, what is the logical argument going to be? Nobody wants a weak bullet. If
mm-hmm.
if you are at the point where you draw your weapon, you should be in a life or death situation. Well, again, there's a reason that police don't shoot to wound. There's a reason we're not trained to shoot in the shoulder or the knee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're taught center mass. You've got to stop that threat, so you go to the biggest target. Well, again, he was being trained by a police officer. So that's the advice that he probably got. He got advice on the weapon. He probably got advice on, you know, the ammo as well.
Got it. Okay. Very well could be. I just, to me, I hear Hollow Point, and I'm just a nobody when it comes to bullets and guns. And I just think that's just, bullets are obviously meant to kill, but to me that's meant to maim and kill. You know, if it doesn't kill you, it's going to maim you worse than a regular bullet, is my understanding.
Okay, but again, my argument for you would be, what is it you're doing when you fire that weapon at the rapist
or
the home invader?
Sure.
Or, well, but that's what you want to do. You've got to stop them. I mean, this is not a game. And people that have ever been attacked, that's who you should have on your show. People that have lived through an attack. Maybe they didn't get a chance to even defend themselves. But talk to them.
Well, I can speak to the being punched in the nose, because I went down and saw stars. I didn't know how I ended up on the floor. I was completely in shock for what felt like a minute until I was, you know, seeing people's legs and feet instead of their heads. And it was just the strangest feeling. So I completely get the being stunned after a punch to the face.
Right. And
I'm talking about if you're being attacked and you think you're fixing to die.
Yeah.
Then
I can't imagine it.
They would have prayed for a hollow point bullet. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But it just depends on who's on that jury, what their experience is, and what the questions. Because, again, I mean, Dr. Glass will tell you, you may be asked, you know, have you been a victim of crime? If they said no, that doesn't mean their children haven't been, or their siblings, or their parents. The people on that jury already have.
And they may not be telling the truth either. They may, you know, that is a possibility too. You know, they may, because they may have wanted to get on that jury so badly. Because there's a lot to some people's mind that goes with it. But, you know, I guess what I think that if, let's say he is not found guilty, and we see George Zimmerman, you know, what can we expect? And then let's say he is found guilty, what can he expect? I mean, if he has to be in prison for however long, I mean, he's going to be a quick target. And so either way, there's no win situation with him. And
it's
so heartbreaking for everybody.
It is. And like Cheryl, my good friend, has said many times, at the end of the day, there is a dead kid. He was 17, he was almost adult, but he had a mom and he had people who loved him and who will miss him, and their lives are forever changed and will never be the same. And same with George Zimmerman. There are no winners, and it was the perfect storm. And a lot of people in the chat room, and I want to address this, and perhaps everybody can jump in. There are some people in the chat room that are saying, oh, because Trayvon didn't go home, or Trayvon wasn't the perfect victim, or Trayvon didn't do what he was told, he should have been killed. Nobody is saying that. That's one of those leaps. Not at all. We're pointing out the things that happened that was a perfect storm and brought it all together.
And Trish, this is exactly what we're talking about, that people, you make one statement and then they've already taken it to the next step. How could anybody come up with that based on what we talked about?
They're saying, we're thinking he deserved to die. No.
Well, that's horrible. But see, that is what is creating a lot of this hostility and a lot of this lack of looking at the facts, because somebody's taking one word and putting their own spin on it.
Right.
And how they got to the conclusion,
how
they got to the logic from somebody saying that he didn't listen to the girl, to his friend, to run home, he should have died. That's horrible. But what is your logic, person that said that, to come to that conclusion?
Well,
that's what I want.
Yeah, because he wasn't the perfect victim, he died. Because he didn't, you know, do what he was told, he died. No, that's nobody is saying that. I just think it was a perfect storm. If you've seen the movie The Perfect Storm, everything that could have gone wrong did, and that's why they all died. Everything that could have gone wrong here, every wrong move both sides made, they did it, and that's what happened. Ultimately, Trayvon Martin paid the ultimate price, and nobody wanted to see that. And that's what makes this case so damn tragic, is there are so many, as you said, Cheryl, you walked what George Zimmerman walked and what Trayvon walked. You actually went there. And there were so many chances for this to go a different direction, and it just didn't.
Sure.
And that is so frustrating. That is so frustrating. And what the big question is, as Rantan points
clear.
Out. Oh, yes. Go ahead, Cheryl.
I'm sorry. I just want to say that the people that are in the chat room that are saying those things, they haven't listened to your show. Because the very first night we ever got together, I said, okay, look, Trayvon Martin can legally walk home from 7-Eleven. He can legally stand in the rain. He can legally talk to his friend. He can legally run if he's frightened. Mm-hmm. On the same token, George Zimmerman sees somebody he thinks doesn't live there and is not acting right. He can legally follow him. He can legally, you know, track him to tell 911 which way he went. So there's a point where both people are acting well within their legal rights. There's mm-hmm. About a minute and 46 seconds where something goes terribly wrong. And that's what we're talking about, a minute and some change. Mm-hmm. And nobody, and I've told Tricia publicly, I've said it on other shows, I wish I'd never walked that neighborhood. Not just as a parent, but I can't separate that I'm a parent. And when you walk it, and you're like, he could have been home now. And you time some more, he could have been home this way. You walk another way, he could have been home again. All you can think about was if he had just gone through that back door or gone in the front door, he would have been safe.
Mm-hmm.
Because George
mm-hmm.
would have never been able to catch him. George would have never known that he went into an apartment. George thought he went out the back gate and told 911 that. George thought he was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And on foot, running, George could have never caught him.
Caught him. And, you know, it's interesting, too, the fact that how he reacted after he was shot, after Trayvon was shot. He showed compassion.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, oh, is he dead? And he felt bad. And he said, you know, when he saw the cross on the officer's necklace, you know, he,
mm-hmm.
he made a remark. So he's not somebody that's particularly vicious, as we're seeing.
No.
You know, he's a watchman. He wants to take care of his neighborhood. He wants to take care of people. So, again, you know, there is not a lot of maliciousness here. So I don't know if he will get manslaughter here.
Well, he might, and that might be one of those jury verdicts that we're talking about that's kind of a compromise. And we're going to probably, hopefully, have Mickey Sherman on again tomorrow. If not, we're going to try and get a couple of other lawyers because I want to know what the options are if he is found guilty of manslaughter. I think if he is found guilty, if George Zimmerman is found guilty, it will be of manslaughter. But
mm-hmm.
I think it very well could easily be overturned on appeal. I don't see George Zimmerman going to jail, at least for a very long time. Cheryl, do you kind of agree with that or not?
You know, it's hard to predict what's going to happen. I will make one prediction. The jury's going to be fast. When
mm-hmm.
when you watch them and they say, nope, let's work through lunch. Nope, we want to come back.
Yeah.
Nope, let's stay till 10 o'clock. They're ready to go home.
Mm-hmm.
And they may already kind of have a really good idea. So I think they're going to vote really quickly no, not guilty on the, you know, murder two. The manslaughter is what's going to keep them there. So the quicker they come back, you know, it'll kind of be
mm-hmm.
a tip of which way they're leaning. So I don't think they'll be out long.
Are they going to deliberate over the weekend, do you know?
Oh, I would bet money, absolutely.
Really? Okay. Because I want to be prepared because if they come back, we're going to do if they happen to deliberate on Saturday and they come back Saturday with a verdict, we'll do a show right after the verdict is read as soon as possible, if I can get out.
Well, I can already tell you there'll be a tactical maneuver by the police to ask them to wait until Monday, even
mm-hmm.
if the jury has a verdict, to wait. And that will be for a safety standpoint to get the maximum number of
things ready.
Officers ready. Mm-hmm. So even if the jury comes back and says, okay, we're done, she's going to hold off, I would imagine. She may not, but I would imagine she would extend that just because it's logical.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think anything is going to actually happen until Monday as far as everybody knowing. But that's just, you know, again, it's a guess at this point because nobody's in the driver's seat but those six people and the judge.
Exactly. And I tend to agree with you, Cheryl. I'm going to put a little more faith in people. I think we've come a long way since the Rodney King
sure.
riot. I think we understand more. about what's going on in this particular case, I'm going to put my faith in people and say that there's not going to be a problem if he is found not guilty for some reason. Dr. Glass, what do you think?
Well, I think there is going to be a problem because some people may want to, you know, an excuse to get out there, and for some people it's fun. You know, there's that perverted thinking. So, you know, and some people, they think that no matter what the evidence is, they still made up their mind that it was a racial thing and that, you know, he was shot because of that. So, you know, it's as we said earlier, it's a no-win situation. But we just have to, you know, really see that, you know, like you said, it's a perfect storm. It's like it just happened. It's a terrible, terrible thing, and every single thing that could go wrong went wrong here. And I, as I said, I keep saying it, the big lesson for every single person out there is that we have to know all of the information. We have to really learn the facts.
And that's it.
Before we come to the conclusion.
And one thing I'm going to do a leapfrog jump here to your book. One of the things we need to know when it comes to information is to understand what people are saying to you through their body. And I want to talk to you for just a moment about, Dr. Glass, about the book that you have out, because you've told everybody your secrets. The thing people have to remember, if you've ever been taken advantage of, somebody has come to you and given you a story and you believe them with all your heart and soul, and they are so sincere and so believable, and so you help them and you end up getting stabbed in the back. Yes, it's happened to me once or twice or 45 times. they give you signals through their body. And this book, your latest book, what is the title again? The Body Advantage?
Well, this is called The Body Language Advantage, and that'll help you too. But there's an even more detailed book that's coming out in October called The Body Language of Liars. And that'll tell you everything you want to know about people who are not telling you the truth, all the signals of deception, from the voice patterns, the speech they use, the facial language, the body language, and how every part of the body is affected when a person lies or doesn't tell the truth. It could save your life.
It absolutely could. It could save your life. It could save you a lot of money. It certainly could save you heartache. And there are people out there, as we know, that are not as nice as we all are, that will take advantage of you. And I think this is very, very important that we learn from you, Dr. Glass, how to read the body language so we are protected. Let's go around the table here and wrap things up. Cheryl McCollum, your final thoughts on the day and perhaps what we can expect tomorrow.
I thought he was over the top. I thought he was passionate, but I think he might have, you know, put the jury off a little bit. And tomorrow you're going to see one of the greatest closing arguments of all time.
That's going to be fantastic. I'm really looking forward to that. Michael in Minnesota, your final thoughts, my dear.
Well, I just want to thank the ladies once again. And Dr. Glass, I pre-ordered your book that's coming out in October. So,
thank you. Thank
you. Yeah, I'm very excited to get that. I ordered it after I heard you the last time.
Thank you so much.
Final thoughts. I think I shared how I felt about the prosecution today. I found him very annoying for some reason, and I couldn't put my finger on it, but he just made me very unsettled and gave me quite a headache, so I don't know what that was all about. I do look forward to O'Meara's closing, however. And, Tricia, to piggyback on what you said, I want to have faith in our fellow human beings that there won't be an outcry regardless of the outcome of this trial. But I have to agree with Dr. Glass. At the same time, I'm very skeptical. I believe there will be fallout. So that makes me really nervous. My heart goes out to the Zimmerman family and the Martin family.
Exactly. Like we say over and over, there are no winners. And I'm going to give the wonderful Dr. Glass the last word here. Dr. Glass, final thoughts and your website again, please.
The website is DrLillianGlass.com, no period after doctor and two L's.
There you go.
And I just think that we really have to be level-headed here. We've learned so much about jumping conclusions. We see that there are no winners, and it's going to take a lot of healing. after this case, because this case doesn't just represent what happened. It represents history and of what happened to other people that we've collapsed into this case. And we really have to be careful about that.
We do, we do. Dr. Glass, we're going to have you on again very, very soon. Of course, Cheryl will be with us tomorrow. And Michael in Minnesota, Alex in Philadelphia, and everybody who called in and in the chat room, I do appreciate your opinions. Even though we may disagree, I actually like it when we disagree because that gets the conversation going. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio, and opinions expressed on this show are those of the hosts and guests, and you know I don't take responsibility for them, so here's the scoop. Remember, Trisha's True Crime Radio is a completely separate entity from WebSleuth.com, LLC, and ForumsForJustice.org. In other words, my little crime butterflies, if you get upset at something, don't take it out on WebSleuth.com or ForumsForJustice.org. You come to me, Trisha, on Trisha's True Crime Radio, and I'll do my best to make you happy again. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio, where we discuss true crime and current events. And we always do it with common sense. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you.